Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
Get over a breakup. It's going to be both healing and hilarious as hell. But first off, let's open the show. We got a caller on the phone. Hey, you're on with Dr. Chris.
Hi, Dr. Chris.
How's it going? What's your name? Tell me your name.
My name is Anthony.
Hey, Anthony. What's going on? How can I help you?
Hi, Dr. Chris. I just want to thank you so much for taking this call. And then my question to you is, a couple of months ago, I came off of a serious relationship that was very toxic. I was dealing with someone very manipulative, mental abuser, narcissist, alcoholic, I mean, you name it.
Wow. And so, how long were you guys together?
We were together for a year and a couple months.
That's a long time to sit through something like that.
Yeah, it really was. It was something that it took me a while to realize what I was dealing with, and I think the breakup was what made me kind of open my eyes and see a little bit more clear.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so this person left me, and I did nothing wrong, so, you know, I'm apparently the at fault.
Wait. This person was a narcissist and was toxic for you, but he had to leave you. You weren't able to leave him.
It's a her.
Okay, but do some work around that. Do some work around that, because that means you're really comfortable staying in really unhealthy, toxic relationships.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing right now. I have been taking time to heal. It wasn't my fault, but I'm just saying, like, on that end, that's how it ended. So I was just kind of leaving it alone, trying to put distance between me and this person and giving myself time to heal. And for some reason, she's been really still contacting me, to the extent of I went to a show a month after we broke up.
Okay.
And she went to that exact same show I was at with another guy.
Accidentally, or do you think she's following you?
I think she did it on purpose.
Okay.
Because we had actually planned, as far as her and I, to go to this show, but I didn't fall through, you know? So,
okay.
I mean, I still went thinking she wasn't going. So it wasn't like we bought the tickets.
So, Anthony, what's your question?
So my question is, I just want to know why this person has still been kind of like haunting me. So like I said, she showed up at this concert. She's been texting me very pushy about having my things, even though I've shown no interest in my belongings and I've showed no care for it. And so she's been texting me or saying, like, when can we meet up to give your things? Or are you still being salty? Just really, really pushy. Really, like, I don't know why she just can't see my silence as
Let me say this. My bigger concern is with you, not with her. And so I want you to focus on taking care of yourself more and setting boundaries. And so I wouldn't allow yourself to be accessible to her. I would block this person. I definitely wouldn't take her phone calls. And I would even maybe have a friend of yours go pick up your stuff. Because my concern is with you protecting yourself, because it sounds like you're willing to stay in toxic relationships. I wouldn't worry so much about what she's trying to do.
Okay, and the thing is, I did tell her, no, I don't want my stuff, actually.
Leave
I'm just
it.
Afraid if
cut
if
the
you
ties
think
and go.
She will still contact me.
You know what? I don't know, but I want you to make yourself not contactable. And so, like I said, block this person. Don't go any place where you're going to see them, because it looks like you got a lot of work to do to learn how to kind of take care of yourself better. But thanks for your question, man.
Okay,
have an awesome night.
Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you as well. Thank you.
All right, we got our question of the night up on our Loveland IG page. When we come back, we're going to be sitting down with Jarrett Hill talking about those difficult relationships when your politics just don't line up. You're listening to Channel Q and the new radio.com. Be back in a minute.
Love Line
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page, so follow us and hit us up. Tonight's question is, what is the best way to recover or get over a breakup? We'll be breaking that on down later in the show, as well as sitting down with Dr. Wider to talk about vaginal rejuvenation, the good, the bad, should you do it? And also Jesse St. John, he's a songwriter, he's written pop hits for everyone. I just found out also for Lizzo. Not mad about that one. But right now we're sitting down with Jared Hill, politics and pop culture journalist, and also host of Drop the Subject with Jared and Ali. What's going on?
That's me. How's it going?
It's good to see you again.
Good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I don't get to see that often.
I know. I used to guest a lot on Let's Go There, and I would see you in transition, but it's been a while now. So
I know.
I've told you this different is pretty worlds. Full circle for me. I grew up like sneaking and listening to Loveline as a kid on the radio, and now to be here doing a segment is pretty wild.
I love hearing that. 25-year legacy. It played a role in a lot of people's lives.
I didn't use the number 25, but let's slow down.
We don't have to go there. It's an age thing.
It's adjacent, but yeah.
Okay. But one of the things we wanted to talk about, and you this is the term that you coined, which I think is awesome, interpolitical relationships, mm-hmm. right? Relationships where each partner has a different political stance, or part they support, and the challenges that come with that. So why is that an important topic to you? How does that come up to you?
Well, I think it's an interesting time right now because we see so many couples that are either breaking up or in real turmoil because they look at politics differently. And I think it's a challenging situation to figure out, what do I do? I've been married to this person for X amount of time, or we've been together in whatever kind of way, and this person voted for Donald Trump and I voted for, you know, whomever else, or we have like disparate views on these different things. And I feel like it's got to be a real challenge. I mean, I said to you, I was listening to your Friday show and you had a person who was on saying like, my boyfriend is homophobic and I don't know what to do with that. And you were like,
and the person was still trying to come from a position of, I'm an ally.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're an actual ally of any minority status, you couldn't possibly be in a relationship with someone who's actively oppressing that identity.
Well, I always tell my straight female friends, like, I always judge their boyfriends based on how they deal with me.
Okay.
And like, if I meet their straight guy boyfriend and he can have a conversation with me and be comfortable, that's like a first indicator for me, like, oh, okay, I can rock with this guy. But like, if he's uncomfortable and reserved and like doesn't know how to have a conversation with me because I'm openly gay, That's a red flag to me.
But it's always interesting to me that they're what kind of low level of intimacy must they have if it takes Donald Trump for these topics to come up, right? Because our political leanings are woven into every aspect of our life.
Well, that's why I think this discordance, if you will, within a relationship is troubling, at least for me as an individual. I don't want to tell other people what to do with their relationships. That's more your job.
I do. But all day long, get paid for it.
But when I hear people say like, oh, I'm dating a guy who, you know, is completely different than me on the political spectrum, I always wonder, like, what kind of longevity can you really have there? Because really, to me, politics is so personal. And it says to me, like, what you believe about the world, what you believe about LGBT people, what you say about brown people, what you believe about poor people, what you believe about the range of spectrum of things.
Your political leanings are your integrity. It's your characterological style and beliefs. It impacts everything.
100%. Absolutely.
And that's why I think it's important for people to have those conversations. But again, the relationships where it takes Trump to bring that to the surface, I'm wondering, like, what kind of deprived relationship must you have in terms of intimacy that it hasn't been brought up otherwise? Watching television?
Yeah.
Commercials?
Well, you said to me before, like, what kinds of things have been suppressed that have never been talked about? And I have to think about, like, how many couples are having conversations about politics in their relationships? And I think that Donald Trump has kind of, like, exploded the political conversation around everything. My parents are watching CNN a whole lot more than they used to, right? And they can tell me who the Secretary of State is and the Department of Defense and all of these different people, all those different secretaries. And I'm like, who are you people? Like, you know what I'm saying?
It's fun. It's
exactly
fun,
right. So I think for people, Donald Trump has awakened something that wasn't really wasn't as prevalent before, because I think there is more of a sense of urgency that people need to know what's going on. But a friend of mine was just saying the other day that he'd heard that Barack Obama was the president that we aspired to be, or represented what we aspire to be as a country, and Donald Trump is who we are.
Wow,
this country
really
has always been racist and overtly capitalist and greedy of those different things. And so I think Donald Trump has really awakened that in people.
So let's talk about the interpolitical relationships. So where do you sit with that? I'm assuming, I'm going to speak for you, that you would obviously only date someone who had similar political leanings as you because of how pervasive
yeah,
these things are.
I mean, I have a really hard time seeing how I could date a Republican in general. And
what
it's
about
not
someone whose family is very Republican-centered, but they're not?
Well, so I've actually had that experience.
Okay.
But this was pre-Trump. This was actually like right before Donald Trump jumped into the race. And I've had, like, I always say, like, I've had one white boyfriend, and I went and got a real white guy. He was from Iowa, and like an Iowa farm, right? Like, legit white guy. And it came up, it was around the time of Freddie Gray in Maryland, when he had been beaten by the police and thrown into the back of a truck and, you know, injured and all that, and passed away. And so he was asking me, like, well, why are they burning down the CVS? And I was like, it ain't about the CVS! You know what I mean? I was like, I can't have to have this conversation with you every single day.
So it's not just also then their political leanings, it's also their awareness of politics.
Absolutely.
So it's like double.
Absolutely.
Double-edged.
And yeah. So it started to bring up things in the conversation where he'd be like, well, my brother's really racist, and, you know, I'd be nervous about you meeting him. And, like, the more we had those conversations, it was illuminating for me, like, oh,
the limits.
Your whole family is going to be a situation for us. And I never ended up meeting his family. We broke up, and that afternoon he was dating a new guy who's an Asian man who he met the family within 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though, because you're going to be bumping into those limits. And I know for me, I make everything very political.
Yeah.
And I see everything through political lens. And so I've dated a lot of people where they'll say to me, you care too much. And what's hard about that is what they're saying in that one statement is your entire mission statement in life, your books, your lectures, everything, just I made it all irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's caring too much.
Exactly.
Where I think that it's the reverse. You don't care enough. And so for me, not only would I have to date someone who has similar political leanings, but they'd also have to be political.
Yeah, absolutely.
Politically aware.
Well, because I've gone out on plenty of dates with guys who will say to me, like, oh, I don't really pay attention to that kind of stuff about politics. And I'd be like,
you're white. That's why.
Well, right? Not even that, because, like, I've had plenty of black men say that to me, and black and brown men say that to me, like, and more so pre-Trump than post-Trump. But, like, whenever someone says that, I remember thinking, like, oh, God, but he's so fine. It's like he's
that's the
cute,
challenge.
But
that's
it's like,
but then also while trying to maybe hold space for growth. So where does that factor in?
Yes, but I think, like, you are who you are, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have no interest in changing the guy that I'm dating. And so I mean, I want to see you grow and be a part of that process with you. But, like, I also don't want to come into a relationship with this perspective of, like, well, I've got to fix this, or I got to change that, or I got to mold that. Like, I want you to come in and be as fully who you are as possible. And I want you to feel as comfortable to express yourself in the ways that you live in the world. I don't want to come in and be like, well, sweetie, we got to get you back on the political game. I don't know what's wrong with that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Because then it's like I spend the whole relationship trying to make you into what I want you to be.
Yeah, it's both. I actually, and this is a true story, twice I went on dates where within the first couple minutes, they both said to me, just so you know, I sometimes make racist jokes.
I got to go. Check, please.
And that's literally what happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank you for being so transparent with me so I know that I don't want to sit down and talk to you. Right.
Yeah.
But then I've also dated people where they weren't politically aware. And so they didn't really know if their politics were, but they still were a good person. And so I was willing to kind of stick around and do a little bit of education.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. Like, oh, we haven't had this direct conversation about how you feel about immigration, but the way that you spoke about Latino people and where they've come from, that tells me how you might feel about this issue.
Right.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
or bad or the ugly.
Yeah.
All right, Jared, thanks so much for sitting down with
us. Of course. Of course.
Where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere on the social medias at Jared Hill. Jared is 2 R's and 2 T's on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and
let's drop the subject every day.
Yes. You can find me every day here from 10 to 2 right now on Drop the Subject with Jared and Allie. I'm actually going to New York, so I'll be doing a week of shows next week from New York.
I'll be in New York this weekend.
Oh, sweet.
Maybe I'll see you.
Okay. Well, text me and I'll see you there.
All right. Now, coming up next, we got Jesse St. John, songwriter, who's also releasing some of his new music. We sit down and talk about that. And of course, on our Loveline IG page, we've got our question of the night. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our Loveline question tonight up on our IG page. It's about the best way to recover or get over a breakup. So hit us up with that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show, as well as talking with Dr. Wider about vaginal rejuvenation. Should you do it? Should you not do it? And who needs it? But more importantly, we're sitting down right now with Jesse St. John. What's going on?
Hi, not much. Thank you for those applause. This is a big full circle moment for me because I used to sneak and listen to the original Love Line when I was a little kid. And we were just saying, like, it was crazy that it was so normalized. And they talked so much about just a lot of sex and things like that, which is cool.
Yeah, it was one of the few outlets. We didn't have the internet.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, Dr. Drew was like the go-to. Do you want to hear something really fascinating? Huh. I've never listened or watched an episode of Love Line.
Oh, really?
I don't even know it.
That's probably for the best.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're not imitating or sort of...
We're very different anyway.
Oh, my God.
I
listen to you a lot as well. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
But I was saying your song Wiser, it was haunting me all day.
Really? Yeah, thanks. Yes. It's kind of... I've been hearing that a lot. I think it's because the line, like, what if I'm not getting any wiser? I'm only getting older. I think people secretly feel that all the time. And I just was kind of like, why does nobody really talk about this? It's sort of like that fear that we're growing up but not becoming the better people that we thought we were.
And that's what makes getting older acceptable, is if there's some kind of value or benefit to it. And
totally.
So as I sit here dealing with ageism in our culture.
I've listened, yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
every day I'm one day older than I was yesterday, so.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Yeah, you kind of don't get it, boo.
Ah!
I love hearing a 28-year-old talk about ageism in our culture. That's cool.
No, I feel it, my gosh. And one of my good friends is 98.
Wow.
Yeah, so she is like constantly sort of telling me the things that she faces and the things that just don't matter anymore. So that when I was like kind of making Wiser, I was becoming really close with her, and she kind of inspired me to talk more about getting older, because obviously in the gay community it's so taboo, and it feels like the representation that we do have is shirtless and young and kind of sexualized in a way, which is totally fine. It is the thing that sort of separates us from heterosexual culture, is the way that we and who we have sex with. But I just think it's cool to talk about getting older. Why not? We all are every day.
You have to get comfortable with it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
So it's interesting what you said, because when I was doing research and looking at articles and interviews with you, because when I'm going to sit down and interview someone, I always try to just get a sense of who they are, right? Like kind
that's
of just
a really
get
good idea.
Understanding.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you refer to not as a songwriter, but a gay songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
So
of course. Yeah.
Now, I was also actually talking to this squad in the green room about that, how I long for a time when those differentiators aren't needed.
I know.
So do you like being called a gay songwriter, or would you rather just be a songwriter?
I would rather just be a songwriter, of course. And I mean, it certainly pigeonholes kind of what I'm like able to do and what I get asked to do. It's sort of like there are a great handful of us writers that are gay. And it kind of feels like if this person gets this opportunity, okay, we kind of filled that slot. So we don't need another gay songwriter in this album.
Diversity right there.
Yeah.
Check that box.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And it's so funny because we are in Pride Month right now, and we are, obviously, I'm proud to be gay, and I'm proud to be a member of whatever community will, you know, embrace me, but it's just sort of
whatever community will embrace
you. Know what I mean?
I'm just happy to be part of whatever club.
Yeah. Well, a lot of us felt sort of outcasted when we were growing up, so it kind of feels nice to have a community that feels grateful to, you know, include you. But
but wouldn't you think that like songs aren't tied to that? So
at all.
Yeah, I've never listened to a song and thought, oh, this must have been written by someone trans or hetero or gay.
I don't either. But the people that are putting together the music usually
think in those terms.
Do kind of, yeah. I know. I hope one day that doesn't really matter. Or, I mean, luckily, like, I have a community of friends and co-writers that are LGBTQ+, and we kind of bring each other in on projects and stuff and look out for each other. And we get to write together a lot for mainstream pop people. But I think that hopefully it just sort of broadens in a way, and it evens out, because, you know, a lot of times when you do look at the credits for who's writing these big pop songs, it's a lot of the same type of people that you would expect over the past, you know, 100 years, which is like cis, straight, white guys who are kind of masterminding what they think will appeal to the broadest audience.
Quote of yours, you were talking in an interview about inclusivity, and you said, use your creativity to uplift heteronormative cisgender girls.
Yeah.
God bless, the center point of the world.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I mean, when we talk about, especially during Pride season, it's really funny when they are putting together the lineups for the people who will be playing the festivals and things like that, it's sort of like, okay, let's make sure we add some gays. You know, and it's kind of like, isn't it our month to...
No, Paul Abdul.
I know. Well, hey, listen, I'm not here. Speaking of ageism, Jesus. She earned her spot.
People said she was jumping off like multi-level nice. Like ladders and landing, and God bless that one. She's a little acrobat.
I'm gonna try to catch it online, but yeah, I heard she was flipping about.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about another quote you said about your projects being part of coping with daily depression.
Yeah.
Heaviness. All right. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on Channel Q and Radio.com. Phone lines are open. 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. Take a little break. We'll be right back.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page, so hit us up with that. But more importantly, we're sitting down with Jesse St. John talking about his music.
Hi.
And I was just saying how thankful I am that you write music under your own name. That is the kind of music that I most relate to.
Aw, thank you.
That cuckoo stuff.
Yeah, we were just kind of talking about, I obviously write for big pop stars, and I'm really grateful. But when it came time to do my music, I kind of wanted to go in with the idea of, yes, I'm able to write like expertly crafted sort of perfect pop that will be digestible on playlists and stuff like that, but I want to play with things that I wouldn't do for somebody else. It's sort of like, why would I sing this song instead of Nick Jonas or, you know, whoever else I would be able to co-write with? Why is this a song that's for me, for my project? So yeah, I wanted to play with a lot of like weird textures and sonic shifts and stuff like that. And a lot of people have told me that my songs sound like they start out as one song and end up as another song, which is really cool to me because I don't think you should make it all the same throughout three
Break
whole
the
minutes.
Rules,
it's kind
man.
Of boring.
Break
yeah.
Because, I mean, again, I'm not a songwriter, but yeah. There definitely seems to be a formula that is followed.
Yeah,
consistently,
totally.
Often.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Verse, pre-chorus, and then you do a bridge, and then it's all kind of one homogenized thing. And I just wanted to, I mean, I'm lucky to be able to do that every day with other people. So for my project, I just wanted to kind of break the rules and mess it up a little bit.
And you also do that aesthetically. I mean, a lot of the visual pieces to your work is overwhelming.
Thanks.
In like a really beautifully intensive and scary way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Somebody said horror pop.
Well, it's like it's like horror beauty.
Yeah,
right.
Thank
There's like
you.
A beautified piece Thanks. At all, but it's horrific.
Thanks. Well, I don't think blood is scary.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
You think blood's hot?
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I I'm not, I guess yeah. This is the place where we can talk about
That's
that.
Right.
But
Let's
yeah,
go there.
Yeah. No, I just never. When people are like, you know, shy away from it or whatever, I'm like, you have it too. You know, we all kind of have it. It's scary to think about because it kind of reminds you of your mortality in a way. Same thing with Wiser as far as getting older. And I never shied away from stuff like that because it's kind of pointless. We have to face it at some point. We all have blood. We're all skeletons walking around.
But you're also not going for the boring, homogenized forms of beauty that our culture is so obsessed with.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of realized a long time. I mean, luckily, I have enough of the basics to be considered like conventionally attractive. But I also never wanted to compete with people who that's all they offer is just that conventional sort of beauty in a way. So for me, I always, you know, was gravitating towards the freakier fringe version of what I thought was hot and beautiful. And I, when I was really little, I saw Death Becomes Her. Do you know that movie?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah. So when I was really little, I saw that movie, and it's sort of an allegory on that pursuit of perfect beauty, and they end up really, really scary and, you know,
right.
stretched with holes in them and blood. And
Isabella Rossellini, right?
Isabella Rossellini.
God bless her.
She says, I chased the spring. That movie to me was just super iconic. And so anything that has to do with death and beauty and gore and
That's your thing.
That's my thing. I'm into it.
That's my thing privately. That's the stuff I watch. So how about you help me answer a DM?
Oh my God, totally.
A listener question.
I don't know if I'll be good at this.
You're
going
to be responsible for someone's sex life. All right. Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. So, Dr. Chris, I had a date planned with a guy I met online. We work in the same industry, so we have the same friends, acquaintances, business partners. He texts me 6 hours before the dinner saying that he got offered double time to work a shift. It's purely for money and has no bearing on his career potential. In fact, as I'm familiar, let's skip over this part. Let's get to this part. Crappy of him, and I don't ever want to see this dude. If he ever needs a professional favor, he's not getting it. What a dumb way to burn a bridge. What do I say? Wait, where's the question in here?
I'm confused. That sounds horrible.
Basically, a text if you want. I don't understand the question. We'll go to a different one.
No.
You want to answer? I don't even know what the question
is. Well, I want to grant that person grace.
I love that.
You know, if this guy needed extra cash, let him rain check with you. I don't know if that's the question, but...
No, that's actually a really beautiful answer.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't know what somebody's going through. It's not personal. It's his life. He doesn't even really...
Everyone's so kind. When Alaska was on, she was just running with compassion in her answers.
I am also an Alaska stan.
Okay. Yeah. I love that. All right. We got nothing but kindness in this studio.
Let's do another one.
All right. Hey, Dr. Chris. So I'm 30 weeks pregnant. And in January, I found some sex chat sites on the computer because it's always signed into his Google account, her partner. Mm-hmm. I confronted him and he denied sexting. He said he watches porn and was probably a link from that.
Hmm.
He has people signed his Google account, so it could have been that. I didn't mean to snoop. It was an accident. It just popped up. You know how that goes. Mm-hmm. I wasn't upset, but I let it go. We're having a rough patch. I searched his history because I'm suspicious. He told me he wanted college porn and everything was porn from college to teens and even gay porn. There was midnight searches of escorts in our area.
Hello?
There were so many escort searches from where we currently live. He used to, let me get to the end of the, let me get to the question. These are long ones tonight. So I'm confused. Why is he searching escorts and gay guys if he's not even gay? I want to confront him, but his mom is coming over tomorrow. What do I do? Come on,
Well,
Jesse.
Wait till his mom is gone.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's number one. Number two is ask him kindly because that's probably really difficult for him.
Yes.
Yeah. So he may not even know that he's lying, and it might be something that he's dealing with internally that he's trying to sort of scope out before he opens up and acts on it.
Be a loving partner and support him.
No,
don't shame him.
Don't shame him is
that's
what
right.
I say.
Yes.
Yes. But please ask him. My gosh.
All right, I like it. Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. So, Jesse St. John, where can people find you?
I'm at Jesse St. John on every social media, JesseSaintJohn.
All right.
And all of that is the same on Spotify and everywhere, Wikipedia.
Yeah, I'm telling you, your new album, like the music you're putting out, is haunting.
Ah, thank you.
So
that's good
out.
For me. Thanks.
That is. Coming up next, we're going to be sitting down with Dr. Wider talking about the impact of porn on female body positivity and confidence, as well as vaginal rejuvenation. And then we'll be breaking down our question of the night. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is about the best way to get over a breakup. Answer that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. But right now, we got Dr. Jennifer Wider on the phone, women's health expert and author. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Chris. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while. You been well?
I've been well. Thank you. Yes.
So, vaginal rejuvenation. Young girls
right.
as young as 14 asking their doctors about it. What is going on?
Really frightening.
Yes.
Actually, this is a big study. There was a large survey done by the American Society of Plastic Surgeons, and the statistics are a little startling, so I think it's worth talking about. In 2016, there were over 12,000 procedures performed on women who are asking for their labia or labiaplasty or a vaginoplasty. So that's basically reshaping the female genitalia to look a certain way to tighten it up to feel a certain way with a lot of different promises of what it can do for your sex life and for, you know, your overall sense of well-being.
Right.
And the issue is that the numbers just skyrocketed. And the problem is that the numbers are, there's a large uptick in the numbers of young women, particularly women under the age of 16, that are asking for these types of procedures. And it really caught the attention of a lot of these, you know, medical societies, because here we are as a society trying to bring out a message of feeling good about our bodies, you know, overall. And there's a large group of people in our country, mainly women, that are being told over and over again by the media and other sources that they just don't look the right way.
And what's interesting is I think like a lot of women don't have access to looking at what the diversity of vulvas or labias are, right? Because where does one really encounter that except for maybe places like porn where it's completely homogenized? It's not really a good sign of diversity, right? So how do we combat that?
Right. And I think that's such a good question. You know, you start to see, you know, girls that are very young and having relationships with boys, and boys are watching porn or girls are watching porn, no matter who's watching it, or they're seeing airbrushed images, you know, one way or the other, even girls in bikinis, and there's no outline of anything, and wanting to look a certain way and everything, you know, like folded in essentially. You know, I think that's a really good point. There was a tremendous book that came out a couple of years ago by a doctor and a patient about the differences in labia among women. And I think that's an important conversation to have. You know, I think it should be part of adolescent development for a parent to speak with a child about what they look like and how there is such diversity among our genitalia. I think that has to become part of the vernacular with, you know, parent to child. And it's, you know, men are, and boys are not immune to this either. There are a lot of boys that are concerned that they don't look the right way. I wrote a book on adolescent development and spoke to many, many parents of boys. And, you know, boys have nipple development when they're 12, 13, 14 years old, where the nipple gets a little puffy, and it's, you know, 50% of the male population gets this, and it's due to hormones and it goes away. But these guys that are 13, 14 feel incredibly self-conscious about their bodies. Many of them don't want to swim, even in, you know, those rash guard t-shirts to protect themselves from the sun. They're embarrassed to go swim. And so I think, you know, we really need to do a better job when it comes to educating and exposing our kids to as many images as possible and letting them know that there's a large range of what's normal.
Okay.
Because especially at that age, Chris, I think that a lot of kids just want to conform for better or for worse. And if you feel like you look different, if you feel like one of your labia is longer, if one of your nipples is puffy, or your hair is growing too much, or everybody's shaving and you're not, or getting laser or whatever, you just want to fit into this large group. And so,
One of the things right now, we're talking with Dr. Jennifer Wider, women's health expert and author, about vaginal rejuvenation and just body diversity. And I'll say, you know, one of the things I try to remind people is that, you know, porn is heavily used. I was looking at the stats. Pornhub releases every year their stats, and, you know, the number is overwhelming at its usage. And I remind people that there's also a diversity of porn. There's body positive feminist porn, which seeks to show diversity of anatomy, gender expression, body size. And so I also try to put that into the conversation. Like, what kind of porn are you watching, and change that up?
Right. And I think that's such a good point. I think, you know, pornography is part of the fabric of our society. Our access is undeniable right now, and there's nothing we can do about it, whether you're for it or against it. Whatever it is, it's there and it's legal and people are looking at it. And that conversation is incredibly important, because a lot of people, especially girls in this generation, are seeing these airbrushed images and they think they should look a certain way, or they worry that their partners want them to look a certain way, and it's really unhealthy. So why not put that into the conversation where we're celebrating body diversity and letting people understand? And it's diverse through culture, too. It's not just, you know, culturally we look different and we celebrate different parts of different body parts in all different cultures. There's a premium on, you know, like robust body parts in a certain culture, whereas in another culture that's deemed unattractive. So that has to be in the conversation also, because we have this, you know, single type model that little girls have grown up with.
That's
and of course, this generation is so much better. You know, where the Barbie is a little bit more diverse.
And I'm also always trying to talk to people about the social media they're following, because there's some really stunning body positive social media accounts where they're showing women with body hair, cellulite, stretch marks, all the things that are just a natural occurrence that we try so hard to hide. Thank you so much, Dr. Wider. We will talk to you
soon. Thanks so much, Dr. Chris.
Have an awesome night.
Definitely. Looking forward to it. You too.
You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, what is the best way to get over a breakup? To recover from a breakup? It's a question that comes up a lot, though. Those things are hard to get through, so I'll be curious to hear everyone's answers. I have my own thoughts, because it's got to be a physical thing and a psychological thing. We're really good at the physical breakup part, where we end the relationship, we don't see them, but really bad with the psychological breakup, which means a couple things. One, don't keep them in your mind. Stop having conversations about them. That literally keeps you neurologically attached. Stop going on their social media. Like, stop bringing them into your lives. Even though it's symbolic, it still doesn't allow the neurological detaching that is required to fully emotionally get over someone. So just make sure you're kind of keeping them out of your life. We ruminate. We will have conversations about our ex over and over and over, talking about them. It's just not a good idea. Okay, so why doesn't your husband want to have sex? Now, I think what's really important about this topic is that it's assumed that men are always hypersexual. And I'll tell you, in my clinical practice, I work with patients that are male identified, that are lower desirous in terms of sex, and they have a lot of shame about it, right? It's assumed that in order to be masculine or to be a man, they have to be the asserter and the one that's hypersexual. Just like I work with some female identified people that are very assertive and hypersexual, and they feel shame about that because they feel like in order to be taken seriously as a quote unquote female or a wife or a girlfriend, they have to be more receptive and not too hypersexual. It might overwhelm their partner. But it really does is it denies the mental health of both people, right? So the work is just about allowing your sexuality to be what it is. And, you know, this is actually really fascinating when I share this with people, because in the men who have sex with men community, there's a lot of discussion around, is someone a top, is someone a bottom? And there's this understanding that one can be both roles or either role. But in hetero couples, they don't talk about those things, and they need to. Because one of the most profound things I say to females around this is, don't assume that because your partner is male identified that they're a top. Your partner might be a bottom, meaning they are more receptive, they are less aggressive, they are less initiatory, and they might have a more quiet sex drive. And so some of the work is on just kind of looking at those different expectations and allowing space for them. So a couple things. You know, we talked about this often. I'm always reminding people, not scary, but just trying to remind that, you know, every decade as you get older, erectile disappointments are going to happen. Less efficient blood flow, as they say, as we age. And so it can be a biological thing as to why your partner's not wanting to have sex, your husband, as we say here. Also emotional distress, mood changes. You know, one of the most arousing things sexually is newness and novelty. And I'm constantly working with the couples in my practice on that. Are you following a scripted step-by-step version of sexuality? Because that is a surefire way to make sure that sex is not fun, right? So it's all about kind of keeping that diversified, being open to talking about it. But, you know, one of the goals I had this year, and also in writing my book, Rebel Love, which dropped in January, is just getting people away from gender roles and gender norms, and to not have any expectations on self or other who you're dating or having sex with based on their assumed or presented gender, because it traps us. It limits us. It's not honest. And most of us actually don't align with that. A lot of us, our sexuality lives outside of that, but we're not given space to really own that or explore that. And so we have to really work on that. And that's one of the goals that I have for a lot of the people in my practice, is stop tying yourself to gender. Stop choosing partners and having expectations on them based on their gender presentation, because that's just not honest and it traps us all. And just more authenticity, right? Like, I'm working also with people on just expressing their sex drive as it's happening, right? And if you're in a healthy, safe relationship, allowing yourself to express it and allowing your partner to say yes or to say no if they're interested, but just not shaming yourself. I read too many people that feel like they're too hypersexual, and it's quite heartbreaking for them and for me to hear. So anyway, more diversity. I always say my work here is done as soon as people are just no longer speaking in terms of gender when it's talking about sexuality. But we got a lot of work to do. I'm not going to say that in my lifetime. Phone lines are always open. 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. We come back, we're going to be breaking down the question of the night. So we still got a few more minutes to go on our Loveline IG page. And then, of course, we'll be closing out the show by sliding back into the DMs. Listen to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question tonight up on our Loveline IG page. But before we break that on down, we have a caller. We got Martha on the phone. Martha, you're on with Dr. Chris. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Chris.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for calling in.
Well, it's going good.
So, firstly, before I get into what I was calling about, I had called a few months ago with a question.
Okay.
And I just wanted to give you a little bit of an update.
Oh, good.
So, my question was regarding, like, how can I explore my newfound bisexuality in my monogamous relationship with a man?
Okay.
And I just, you know, it took some time to understand that even though that I'm with a man, I'm still bisexual. I'm still attracted to women.
That's right.
It's not like my sister says, she's so bad. She tells me that, like, I chose a team. I'm like, no, because we still like women. But I just so happen to be with a man.
Yeah, people like to do that. They like to just look at your current partner and decide your total sexuality based on that, right?
Yes. So it took me a little while to understand that, but I now realize just because I'm with a man doesn't mean I'm not bisexual.
That's right.
Because I'm still very much turned on and into women.
Got a girl. I like it. I like it.
Wanted to give you that update.
I am proud of you. Hold it down. Hold it down. Bisexuality is real.
Yes. Yes. Yes, it is. So now is what I was calling with was I just recently moved in with my boyfriend and I love him so much. And he's basically my best friend. He's everything I've always wanted. And we're having a lot of fun. But, you know, when we used to live apart, I would only see him on the weekends. And that anticipation just made
that's
the sex
right. Work. And the sexting Ooh. And the foreplay. People think foreplay yes. happens minutes before sex, but it can happen days leading up, right? Knowing that weekend's coming.
Yeah, seriously.
That's right.
Seriously, like by the time the weekend came by, I was like extremely thirsty. Mm. And not meaning to say that I'm not as thirsty now, okay. but I just wanted to get a few tips on like how to keep that going.
How to keep that thirst, right? Because you move in with someone and it changes
yes.
things. I mean,
yes.
that's the thing is like there's this magical formula where, you know, you want a certain level of closeness, but in order to keep the sexual energy alive, we also need a certain level of distance. And our general dating style mm-hmm. is we want familiarity and consistency and as much closeness as possible and move in and live with me and sleep in my bed. And that kills sex. So it's all about finding some level of newness and novelty. We tend to follow certain scripts where, you know, we start sex by kissing and then you touch my boobs and then we do some genital play and then we go to penetration and that's so boring. And so the first thing I just tell mm-hmm. people is like just switch that up, days, times, places. I mean, do you guys follow certain habits sexually?
You know what? Not so much.
Okay.
And it's
good.
Honestly, because like I've been listening to your shows for like a while and I've learned so much from you even before like I started having sex. So one thing that him and I understand is that sex is not just penetration.
That's
so
right.
that helps so much.
That's right.
Because when he's not like feeling ready for that, because maybe for whatever reason that might be, like it's okay. We can still do other things. We have our hands. We have our mouths.
Tongues, fingers, toys. Well, that's the gift.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. So far you got the foundation down. So I'm proud
that.
Of you, Martha. You got the foundation down.
Thank you.
I mean, I'll say
you
this.
You taught me that.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you for bringing me a part of your sexual journey. But you know, there's I also remind people there's a limit, right? Where again, inherently mm-hmm. in living with someone and spending so much time with them, that naturally will decrease some of the arousal. It's just part of that
mm-hmm.
formula. So you might be doing the best you can. So is your question,
okay.
I'm doing it the best I can, but I'd love to just get some tips to kind of push it even a little bit further.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So a couple things.
Yes.
One of the things I love couples to do, and let me know if this is too basic for you, because you seem to really have mm-hmm. a lot of confidence, which is good. I do tell some couples to take a trip together to a sex boutique and to wander around the store and look for things that they're not familiar with or that grab their attention, take something home.
Oh, Dr. Chris, they've already done that. I have a rewards membership at one of those stores. They know me.
They punched your membership card like back again, Martha. Well done. Well
yeah,
done.
You know what? That's probably what we need to do. Maybe we need to take another trip again and see what else we can find.
I mean, that's why I love sex stores and sex boutiques is because it's these companies where their little job is to just try to find new and interesting ways to enhance sexuality. Listen, Martha, thank you so much for calling. Thank you for being such a big fan of Loveline. Call me back and let
oh,
me know
welcome.
The rest
yes.
of your journey. Always here for you.
Yes.
Have an awesome night.
Yes. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be breaking down the question of the night and then, of course, sliding into the DMs. So you still got a little bit more time to weigh in on that on our Loveline IG page. Phone lines are always open, 833-LOVE-001. You're listening to Loveline on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the nighttime. So tonight's question was, what is the best way to get over a breakup? I was waiting for a little sound effect there, but that's cool. Oh, that's all right. I would do it for you myself, but I'm not very good at making sounds. Question of the night. There it is. I knew we could do it. All right, so here's the answers y'all gave me. How to get through a breakup. Get back into a hobby or activity that you love, but stopped making time for. That's actually one of the things I did in my breakup. I just delved deep into all the things that I wanted to do that I wasn't given the time to do when in love. Here's another one. How to get over a breakup. Get on top of someone else. It's true. The easiest way to get over someone is to be with someone that you prefer more. That's right. You don't look back longingly anymore. That's right. Someone else said wine and lingerie, they'll never see. Ah, yes. But you know. That's right. Someone else said go out on a date with someone new, have fun, hang out with friends, watch scary movie marathons. Yes, please. Scary movie marathons all the time. Someone else said remind yourself you won't feel the same way in 2 weeks. Yeah, that's right. It's like a time game. Got to kind of hang in there. It's also about what you do in that time period, right? Make sure you're doing self-care. It's really easy to not take care of ourselves in those times. Someone said, fall in love with the most recent version of self. Take inventory of new wisdom from the relationship. Yeah, that's the gift of a prior relationship, is looking back at who you were that you want to be again and also who you were that you don't want to be again. You get to decide what you're going to take into your new relationship. Someone else said, totally delete them from your social media and delete their number. I like this one. Someone said the best way to get through a breakup is ice cream. Non-dairy, please. Non-dairy. Best way to get over a breakup or recovery from someone. Someone said, do something spontaneous. I volunteered out of country on a whim after getting out of a 4-year relationship. Wow. I did think about something like that. I actually got into a training program in Vancouver. Flew up there. That's a whole story for another day. Someone else said, lots of porn. That'll get you through a breakup. I hear you. I understand. Someone else said, just learning that you're better off without them and finding self-love. Sometimes it's dodging a bullet. You know, I lovingly look back and I think, I would not want that now. You know what I mean? That's a gift. Someone else said, eating your weight in ice cream. Another ice cream. You love ice cream. Hanging out with friends and staying busy. That's right. Stay distracted. Here's a good one. The way to get over a breakup is by sleeping with their ex or their best friend. Now, I don't co-sign on that one. That's horrible. I understand your feelings are obviously hurt, but that does not make anyone feel better. Maybe for the moment. Just keep dating. Take your mind off things. Getting into yoga. Smoking weed, someone said, helped with their anxiety. Find someone better. Turn to your friends. Here's a good one. The way to get over a breakup, go into your hoe phase. That is true, though. If you just came out of a relationship, if it was monogamous, now you're single, you can have all the sex you wanted to have. You know, sex with all those people you've been flirting with, but you couldn't be with. Downloading dating apps. You don't have to commit, but you can feel less lonely. I actually agree with that. One of the most powerful ways to get over a breakup is to go on dates or the dating apps to be reminded that you are still desirable and that dating is possible, just maybe not right then. It's good. Okay, time to slide into the DMs. Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, my friend with benefits and I would have discreet fun always. And when I suggested having open fun outside of the bedroom, he was very hesitant and said he's discreet and very straight performing. I don't think I've heard that one before, straight performing. Anyway, he stopped messaging me, blocked me on all social media, but now I can't stop thinking about him when I'm in my bed alone with myself. How do I get over wanting to see what he's up to and creating a fake social media account to still be a part of his life? Okay, a few things. I'm sorry your feelings are hurt. I'm sorry you were let down. But creeping on his social media is not going to let you feel better or get over him. And creating a fake social media account to still be a part of his life is not actually being a part of his life. Man, focus on spending your time doing things that make you feel good, because that's going to make you feel bad, right? I'm a big fan of, even if you're not ready to date again, I'm a big fan of, what was that?
Sorry,
I'm hearing sounds creeping up in the back. I'm a big fan of people, though, going back on the dating apps, because studies show that we feel our least desirable after a breakup, right? Our confidence drops, and having yourself reminded that you are desirable and you are dateable and that there's a wealth of single people looking to be in relationships can really sometimes give us more hope for the future. So that's my advice with that one. All right, you guys, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Sliding to our DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. And tomorrow night, we got Amaya Scott. She's going to be talking about her brand new book, so give us a call. She'll be in. You guys have an awesome, awesome night, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.